Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is your host, Ron Edwards, coming to you on a beautiful fall day here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We're coming to you from, well, almost Trump country, if you will. A nation in turmoil, puzzlement, bewildered, and all of those expressions that are oftentimes used when people don't know what it was that hit them. Last week's program, we were less than, 24 hours after the results had started coming in on the 8th day of November, 2016, election in America. Big surprise. We this columnist felt that there was the possibility of an upset, if you will. But we assumed that the Democrats and Hillary Clinton had done their groundwork, if you will, and would be able to, in fact, win based on the Electoral College. Actually, Donald Trump and his minions pulled a quick reverse. They concentrated on the states with the greatest number of electoral votes. And for the second time in 16 years, the Democrats saw their candidate win the popular vote, lose the Electoral College, and by extension, lose the race for the White House. January 20th, 2017 is going to be an interesting day. There certainly will be no meetings going on down the street on Pennsylvania Avenue with Republican leadership meeting to decide how they will undermine the new incoming president, as was done to Barack Obama in January of 2009. Of course, President-elect Trump has already stirred controversy with regards to the selection of his internal staff 2 days ago as of the broadcast of this program. And there are some troubling appointments, if you will, but we need not beat that horse to death. The same pundits, the same experts, the same whatever that were making the prediction that Hillary Clinton was going to win. The African-American vote was taken for granted, no doubt about it. Folks just assumed that African-Americans would go to the polls in numbers similar to those in 2008, 2012 on behalf of Barack Obama. And even the magic of Barack Obama being involved in whirlwind trips back and forth across the nation in order to salvage the candidacy of Hillary Clinton was not enough. Even in the state of Ohio, LeBron James, one of the greatest basketball players ever to live, man who led the Cleveland Cavaliers to an NBA title this past year, could not get African Americans encouraged and enthusiastic enough to turn out in significant numbers to carry the state of Ohio for Hillary Clinton. Likewise, folks were not able to stimulate, if you will, the enthusiasm, the sense of purpose, the sense of mission in places like North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Florida. Ooh. You know, a week ago this past Tuesday, when at 8:05 we said on this program last week, we heard the declaration that CBS, NBC, ABC were calling Florida for Donald Trump. We knew that the election was lost. We were surprised at a couple of items, if you will. 29% or better of the Latino, Hispanic population voting for Donald Trump makes you kind of wonder what kind of infighting has been going on in those communities, if you will. 8% allegedly for African Americans, though some commentators indicated the number was greater, but of course that was not factual information. Other racial and ethnic groups seem to maintain a response, Donald Trump, relevant to the kind of outrageous and insulting comments, declarations, statements, speeches, and et cetera that he made during this 16 or 17 months of campaigning. Now, the rubber has met the road. President-elect Trump has shown that he is prepared to bring even neo-Nazis into the sanctity, really, of the White House, if you will. And that in itself is a warning sign. Just yesterday, the FBI reported that he knew those of us that have the time and the patience and the commitment to watch closely what is going on around us, that over and in excess of 300 assaults, race hate crimes have taken place in the last couple of weeks here in the United States. People are acting like they're surprised. I don't know why they would be surprised. This clearly should have been anticipated by those who have been entrusted with the safety and the quote-unquote movement of direction by a community, we, the African-American community. It didn't happen, and there will be harsh consequences. Over the next 4 years, some maintain that Donald Trump will not last and will step aside as president. I mean, my statement and reflection as a historian and a longtime observer of American politics and a longtime involver of American politics. Why would Donald Trump want to step aside prematurely when he now holds the most powerful and most effective office on the face of this planet, President of the United States of America? And so we will watch closely as members of the Fourth Estate what is happening, what the plan is. Here in our own beloved Minnesota, not a lot of talk about the fact that Minnesota barely stayed in the blue column, if you will. If it had not been for a very, very pitched battle in the 8th Congressional District of Minnesota, which includes what is called the Iron Range, which has been a diehard Democratic fortress, if you will, for many years, turning out in a very, very close contest between the incumbent Representative Nolan and Mr. Mills, Stuart Mills, if I'm not mistaken, Minnesota possibly could have been lost into the red column. Now, I'm amazed at the conversation I'm hearing amongst some of the more knowledgeable, quote-unquote, experts of color, stating that the Republicans are not in control. Yes, they are. They're in control of the Senate. They're in control of the House. Only the office of the governor, the office of Secretary of State, office of Treasurer, and et cetera, did not fall into their column, and the only reason was that those offices were not standing for election. Probably one of the most successful federal representatives was Congressman Keith Ellis of the 5th Congressional District of Minnesota, who won by over 20-some thousand votes, if not more, and has now thrown his hat into the ring to be chairman of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, which is in tatters, if you will, which has been absolutely destroyed by their lack of preparation, good planning, strategy, and et cetera. Our take here on Radio Black America is that Congressman Ellison will not be rewarded, though there are no rewards to be made, and become the chairman of the DNC. In fact, the DNC position is so demanding as it pertains to time that we could not begin to imagine how Congressman Ellison could carry out his responsibilities as a member of a very polarized House of Representatives, and at the same time put in the 70 to 80 hours that is needed, quote-unquote, to put the DNC, let's put it like this, to put the Democratic Party back together again, like if it's Humpty Dumpty. And so there are a lot of statements being made, a lot of reflections being made. Donald Trump has talked in terms that he is prepared to offer economic stimulus programs to the quote-unquote inner city. You better read that one very closely and get a better feel for what he is really saying, if you will, particularly in light of who he is surrounding himself with. And he is bringing in some of the very people that he denounced, if you will, enunciated displeasure with, and et cetera, big corporate America. Of course, in many respects, there wasn't much difference between he and Hillary Clinton as it pertains to who fed at the trough of big corporate America. The one thing that we do know is that Barack Obama will have completed his 8 years. He was a man who, when he took office on the 20th of January 2009, was looking at a country that was nosediving into a depression, not a recession. We were already in a recession. The bottom had fallen out of housing and et cetera. People lost their equity, lost their homes, lost their jobs, if you will. Some even lost their minds. And so we watch that tonight here in America. We, in the tradition of the Romans on this program, now refer to AT after Trump, if you will. E.T. was before Trump. Donald Trump's going to be there for 4 years if his health holds up and nothing else happens. In the meanwhile, the international scene is extremely fragile, volatile, and et cetera. The Russians have resumed bombing in the area of Syria and even Iraq. Russia, in fact, has deployed its only aircraft carrier. It only has one, but it has deployed that aircraft carrier in the eastern Mediterranean and are flying sorties, if you will, bombing raids, and are continuing to kill significant numbers of people of color. See, no one talks about, in all of the debates that are going on, how many people of color, be they Syrians or Kurds or Iraqis, if you will, or Afghans, if you will, and other groups, other Libyans, if you will, terrible battles and atrocities going on in Libya. No one has turned their attention to that right now. Libya is not important. It will become important once again, once the price of oil continues to shrink. And it's certainly well below $100 a barrel. But there's plenty of time for whoever will be the Secretary of State for Donald Trump. Some have even mentioned the name of Giuliani, if you will. Giuliani, though, may become the Attorney General of the United States. That'll be interesting. There are others who bring really no experience in government. They bring experience in business and investments and big money. What does that mean for Black America? Well, it means troubling times. It's kind of a situation where you are preparing for a long, hard winter, and if you already do not have your supplies in place and have made the necessary plans to survive the nuclear winters of the next 4 years, then you are in big trouble, if you will. Does the Democratic Party have the necessary wherewithal to recapture some semblance of power by the midterms, if you will, in 2018? I don't know. But unfortunately, tonight we are not able to receive any calls. My associate, Mr. Allen, is not available. But there are things that need to be said in such a way as to not have interruptions or et cetera. Let's start taking a look at some of them. Let's come home to the local scene. By the way, the state of Minnesota, and particularly St. Paul, will be in the national news. Well, in fact, they already were. National radio and TV broadcasts at 5, 6, 6:30, 7, and etc. reported on a very, very significant and unprecedented action, rare anywhere in the United States, where a county prosecutor, an Asian, if you will, Mr. Choi, the county attorney for the county of Ramsey, which also is the county that houses the quote-unquote state capital of the state of Minnesota, announced at around 10:40 this afternoon on all television stations here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, that he had decided to charge a Hispanic officer who had been involved in the death of Mr. Castillo in early July with second-degree manslaughter, if you will. We will all, of course, watch closely how this will process itself, how it will proceed, what will be the sensational reflections, revelations, and et cetera, that will be forthcoming. It was, as we said just minutes ago, surprising. It is not the norm in America for a law enforcement officer involved in the death, particularly of a person of color, to be charged, if you will, by complaint, and to find themselves facing at least hard time in a penitentiary. In the state of Minnesota, second-degree manslaughter carries a term of as much as 10 years, but as little as a $20,000 fine and possible probation. Now, during the afternoon today, we received many calls from associates around the country. We had thought that we'd be able to bring them on the air tonight, but with the unavailability of Mr. Allen, we are not in a position to do that, because that's his end of the communication and networking. But let's take a look at the Castillo situation, because it comes just one day after a series of memorials here in the city of Minneapolis in the matter of the death of Jamar Clark on the 15th day of November 2015 in North Minneapolis on a early Sunday morning, very early Sunday morning, if you will. Three agencies' investigative answers surrounding the death of Mr. Clark, who was shot once in the head by a Minneapolis police officer. All three entities exonerated the officers and declined to take any action, either criminally or administratively, if you will. We had waited for quite some time, since late November of 2015, for the significant evidence in which community was led to believe existed, which would present the prima facie, if you will, and lead to at least the officers in the situation in Minneapolis going to trial. That never happened. Organizations such as the Minneapolis NAACP, the Minneapolis branch of Black Lives Matter, they have at least three branches here, maybe four here in the Twin Cities now, did not seem to have the strategy together, did not seem to be able to produce the evidence that they maintained as early as the morning of the 15th of November 2015 that they had acquired via video and witnesses and et cetera and et cetera and et cetera. We had said for over a year on this program, our own television program, newspaper columns and et cetera, that this was going to be fatal to the African-American community. On the case of Mr. Castillo, there was a piece of evidence which was captured and was made known to the world, and that was the video on the phone of the young lady identified as the girlfriend of Mr. Castile, who in a dramatic two and a half minutes actually filmed for the world to see the death of Mr. Castile as he was shot. And we now know the actual number. There had been speculation. He was shot 7 times by the police officer who was from the city of St. Anthony, which is actually not a municipality in Ramsey County, but because of a agreement with a small municipality called Falcon Heights, that the St. Anthony police had a contract to patrol and provide protection to the enclave of Falcon Heights. Now, we posted early this afternoon on our national website the following. The situation is this. And this ties in also to Jamar Clark, because that situation will never be forgotten, nor can it necessarily be ever resolved. But in the case of Castile, you have the following. You have an Asian prosecutor, who is the county attorney, Mr. Cho. You have the victim, an African-American, Mr. Castile. You have the police officer, who is a Geronimo Islam. And contrary to what is said by leaders of the St. Paul NAACP earlier this afternoon, you will have a all-white or at least 80% white jury. I know what people are saying. I know how great it is for people to make statements and declarations and et cetera, but Minnesota does not have a history of setting any significant numbers of African Americans or either other people of color on a petit jury. A jury of 12, some cases a jury of 6. And the NAACP St. Paul jury would be drawn from, quote unquote, the inner city, if you will, of St. Paul, the inner city, quote unquote, of the county. I think that that represents naivety. That's not going to happen. And clearly, the attorneys who will be representing and defending the Latino Hispanic police officer will use every trick in the book. There's another feature which, in conversations with associates around the country through the day today, who we had hoped to have on this program tonight, but again, we're not going to be able to do that because our electronic systems are down, if you will. But one of the questions they kept asking me was to tell a little bit more about the prosecutor, the county attorney. And I said that he has had a history, the city attorney for the city of St. Paul, and then elected as county attorney, its elected position, as a man of compassion, of fairness, if you will, a man who, as a person of color, an Asian, if you will, had great sensitivity and understanding about the problems facing people of color in the United States, in the state of Minnesota, and in Ramsey County. Now, that factor was not in play in the case of Jamar Clark. Jamar Clark, an African-American, 24 years of age, as we said, shot and killed on the evening of, well, actually the early morning of the 15th of November of 2015, was an individual, a black victim, shot by a white police officer, and the case reviewed by a white prosecutor slash county attorney named Michael Freeman. Mr. Freeman, who already has a celebrated case, which our community doesn't talk about anymore, it has a case dealing with a young man who was shot and killed a couple years ago by the name of Terrence Franklin, if you will. I can remember a couple years ago, there was a lot of celebration, quote-unquote, of what is going to be done and et cetera. folks riding on the coattails of tragedies in Florida, marching with large groups of individuals who talked in terms of how they were going to, quote unquote, bring justice for Terrence Franklin. Mr. Franklin actually was to have gone to trial, his case, which is now a civil case because the same county attorney that everyone had all of this confidence in, Mr. Freeman, had declined, and I don't know how people in the early part of this year, 2016, had such amnesia that they forgot that County Attorney Mike Freeman had, in fact, refused to also indict in the situation surrounding the death of Terrence Franklin. And, of course, in the case of Terrence Franklin, there were numerous officers, members of the SWAT team, but I have detected that most people around here have decided that for political reasons that they will acquire amnesia. And so when you ask the average person on the street about Terrence Franklin, people give you a blank look. That's just how easily the recollection of you, your circumstances, and in most cases your demise are handled in this city. But it is merely a reflection of the leadership that we have, unfortunately, in both of these cities. Now, in the coming weeks, the leadership in St. Paul, Minnesota, which is also the state capital, St. Paul being smaller in population than the city of Minneapolis by probably about 140,000, both having about a similar number, percentage-wise, of so-called African-American population, if you will. There will be much discussion and hurrahing about the fact of what they created to have happen, if you will. But here's something to keep in mind. With the decision this morning to charge the officer, the Hispanic Latino Mexican officer, if you will, with second-degree manslaughter, the county attorney, Mr. Choi, indicated that he felt that that was the best statutory termination that would allow for a conviction. Of course, this is the first time in the modern history, notice we said the modern history, of the state of Minnesota, that a peace officer, law enforcement officer, has been charged with any crime, be it misdemeanor, aggravated assault per se, and particularly murder in the second and first degrees in modern times, if you will. But the one thing that will be guaranteed is that the jury, as we said just minutes ago, will be 80% Caucasian. In fact, the jury may be all white because I have to assume that the police officer from the city of St. Anthony will have attorneys who know and understand the politics of what is happening. You have to understand that by the time they start getting into motions and et cetera before the judge, which will probably start happening as early as Friday when certainly the officer will plead not guilty, and et cetera, and et cetera, et cetera. By the time, let's say, April and May of 2017, a number of things will be happening. Number one, there will be a different, quote-unquote, leadership in the United States of America, one that is not as, quote-unquote, considerate, friendly, or compassionate, quote-unquote, to the issues of the sons and daughters of the Africans. The Trump regime will be entrenched. In fact, one of the things that happened here today in the Castillo case was that the announcement was made that Jeff Paulson, a legendary assistant U.S. attorney for the federal U.S. Attorney's Office here in Minnesota, that Jeff Paulson was going to be working with the state prosecutor. Now, I'm not, and like I said, unfortunately, we are not taking any calls this evening, although you are free to text me for those that I've been talking with during the day today, and I will attempt to raise any questions that you may have over the air. But I'm trying to get a feel for how long the federal government will show interest in the prosecution of this case involving the death of Mr. Castile. With a new doctrine, notice what we said, doctrine, a new administration, and certainly a new attorney general. Ms. Lynch will not be the attorney general of the United States after the 1st of February. In fact, all so-called constitutional officials are really required by tradition, you know how important tradition is in America, to submit their resignations to the incoming president, and I'm quite sure that president-elect, soon to be president, Donald Trump, will accept without regret these quote-unquote resignations. Now, as we said earlier, the name of former Mayor Giuliani of New York City is being thrown around, both as Secretary of State, as Attorney General, if you will. I don't know. Donald Trump may decide to appoint David Duke, head of the most powerful white supremacist group in the United States. He may propose him as Secretary of State. He may have proposed him as Attorney General of the United States. We don't know. And in many respects, we are powerless. Oh, I know it sounds great to talk in terms that folks are organizing and et cetera. And of course, the second part of tonight's program, we will be taking a look at an attempt to become the second African-American and second African-American woman to be mayor of the city of Minneapolis. We'll be getting to that in just a couple of minutes. And as we are only on an hour tonight, we will be concluding everything at 9:30. And so it will be a different America by the time that defense attorneys and prosecutors in the case of Mr. Castile began to make their motions, the maneuverings began to happen, and et cetera. Now, here's a question that I will ask, and I know many of the great minds in the leadership of my community have answers for it. I know they've thought it through, as I'm quite sure they've thought through some other issues that we will be raising over the next 30 minutes as it pertains to the mayoral race. But I would assume that one of the first things, that the police officer, Mr. Geronimo, asks us what will happen is the attorneys will ask for a change of venue. Now, if I was his attorney, if I were representing this Latino Hispanic officer, I would certainly indicate that there has been pre and post prejudice and et cetera against my client, if you will, and that consequently we need a change of venue. Now, as quiet as it's kept, there is a fairly heavy concentration of Latinos and et cetera in the metropolitan area. But there is even a more impactful group of Hispanic Latinos and et cetera in the southwestern part of the state, down around the areas of Pipestone and Jackson and Windham, Minnesota, if you will, Wells, Minnesota, and back along Highway 90. So that will be an interesting fight. How hard will County Attorney John Cho, how passionate will he be to fight the issue of possible change of venue, if you will? But on the other hand, because there are so much color involved, we repeat again, as we've said on our national website, Asian prosecutor, black victim, Latino Hispanic police officer, all will be judged by a white, predominantly white, if not all white, jury, if you will. I can appreciate and respect what the leadership of the NAACP of St. Paul. I assume that they will be joined by the state NAACP and its president, located in Rochester, Minnesota. And I assume that the Minneapolis NAACP, under new leadership again for the second time in 2 years, Jason Soule, an instructor at one of the local small colleges, the new president elected the first Tuesday of the month of November. I'm quite sure that he will rally his organization and provide the and help provide the necessary legal strategy as it pertains to issues such as change of venue and et cetera. Now, one of the things that will be interesting in the Castile is when the attorneys start doing discovery. And it is my observation, as a longtime observer of some of the most sensational trials in the last 50 years dealing with the issue of race and constitutional protection for African Americans, be they the victim or be they the suspect, if you will, is how the issue of jury selection and et cetera will be handled, but also what will be the rules of engagement as it pertains to depositions, if you will. See, what people are not understanding that already, because in the by the police officers, actually both officers, though I thought that the white officer who was with Geronimo kind of threw him under the bus with regards to indicating that he was shocked that his colleague had opened fire, shooting Mr. Castile 7 times. But I'm quite sure that they can work that out. But one of the things in the document, and County Attorney Choi touched on that, interesting enough, is that the officers indicated that there was the smell of marijuana coming from the car when they stopped it and had the soon-to-be-deceased Mr. Castile roll the windows down and et cetera. Now, if there is any kind of prior history of drug activities and et cetera, and this is admitted by a judge, if you will, it will have certainly an influence on a jury, particularly a jury that will, as we said earlier, be anywhere from 80% to 100% white. I know folks don't like to think about that. I know that we like to pretend that we can handle and work with the quote-unquote liberal factions. Only problem is Minnesota has shown unequivocally that it is nowhere as liberal as folks think that it is. I don't know on that particular issue, particularly to our international and domestic audience, why you should be surprised when you take a look at the statistical data, which shows, with the exception of incarceration, in which African Americans are number one in being incarcerated in the state of Minnesota, that in all other categories, economically, educationally, housing, and et cetera, the African American population is at the bottom the totem pole. This is not something that is being advanced or manufactured by this black commentator. This information was brought forward by a federal agency called the Bureau of Census, if you will, which actually knocked the pinnings under, out from under, many liberals here in the state of Minnesota. And I think is one of the reasons where and why there was not the kind of enthusiasm for black voters here in the state of Minnesota to get out and really make a difference. And as we said, Donald Trump came with, you know, within a couple thousand of making the state of Minnesota red, and as a part of the momentum allowed the Republicans to take control for the first time, 45 years of the Minnesota Senate, if you will. They already had control of the Minnesota House of Representatives. But back to the Castile situation and preparation for trial. We would keep a close eye if, for those that say that they are trial watchers, if you will, watch the judiciary system and et cetera, for the depositions. I'm already hearing some very interesting reflections and comments by some of the law enforcement associations here in the state of Minnesota. First and foremost, irrespective of Judge Hatcher, if you will, and et cetera, this is a very fragile situation. Family of Mr. Castile are still extremely fragile, but they could be made more fragile. When the sensationalism, if you will, when the social media begins to spruik its information and its quote-unquote analysis of what is really going on. It was a great day for justice, at least preliminary justice, but this is just the exhibition season, if you will. The real ball game starts, then the attorneys for the St. Anthony police officer begin to file their motions. And if they ask for a change of venue, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in a state that came very close to embracing Donald Trump in the election of 2016. Now, we are having another piece of history, and now we go back to the loss of the life of Jamar Clark. Yesterday, the former president of the NAACP, Mr. Beleve Pounds, a former law professor at St. Thomas University, or the University of St. Thomas, one of the more prestigious Catholic institutions in the United States, indicated her candidacy to become mayor of the city of Minneapolis. It was interesting, some of the reflections in the major paper here, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, yesterday, talking in terms of some observations with regards to can she succeed or can she not succeed. And there's no need really to totally debate that. Only time will tell. But this observer, this commentator, has a couple questions. But one of the key questions is a situation that is being kept, you know, well suppressed because everybody was paying so much attention. So I don't know that as many people got out and voted that should have, if you will. I heard a lot of people talking about that they were working on voter registration and things like that, but they never exposed themselves to indicate if they too voted because, you know, you can always go in and look at the registration and find out how many people really voted. I find that people are real charlatans, if you will, with regards to talking about voting, but they don't vote, if you will. And so the announcement by the former law professor at St. Thomas indicated that she was going to be challenging the current incumbent first-term mayor, Betsy Hodges, if you will, a two-term member of the Minneapolis City Council prior to her election as mayor of the city of Minneapolis 3 years ago. Now, what came to my mind was how the former NAACP president, let's say that there is a reverse Trump situation here in Minneapolis in November of 2017. See, got to remember dates, got to remember, you know, length of time and et cetera. And let's say that she puts together an organization, her people get out and vote, if they're eligible to, if they're registered to vote, et cetera. I assume that many, 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 many Black Lives Matter supporters and et cetera, particularly blacks, if you will, got out, voted, participated in the democratic process. I hope that they did, though the numbers clearly indicate that there was something amiss, if you will, with regards to a high turnout of African Americans. In fact, I notice no one is touching on that, talking about that, but then we are a city that doesn't do too well with statistical data if it doesn't serve our agenda, if you will. But back to this particular situation. A week and a half ago, while everybody's attention was turned to the national election, the Minneapolis Police Federation turned down a contract offer from the city. You know, these entities are labor oriented and et cetera, and they have and this is still a labor state, if you will. And so the police federation, by more than 2-1, if you will, 400 and some votes to 200 and some votes, turned down the offer by the city of Minneapolis. Now, by law, of course, law enforcement and first responders and et cetera cannot strike. That's not to be confused with what happened in Atlanta when, you know, thousands of nurses went out. Now Atlanta is saying it cost them about $25 million. That means that a whole lot of folk better have a whole lot of insurance if they decide to go to the Atlanta hospital system. And they have, five hospitals here in the Twin Cities. But in the case of the police, a police department working without a contract is not a happy department, if you will. That means you've got a lot of unhappy officers who can find other things to do and other ways of policing or not policing. So let's say that Kiva Levy-Bounds wins in November of 2017. Everyone sings hallelujah. We even bring in, you know, one of the big choirs from one of the big churches in Atlanta or Dallas or somewhere, you know, and we're all ready to go. Now, that then brings a couple of questions. How will Ms. Bounds deal with the issues surrounding the Minneapolis Police Department law enforcement? We're not even talking in terms of other aspects because she has talked in terms that she's going to, her agenda is to work on the creation of jobs. Now, of course, in 2015 to 2016, during that year period from May 2015 to actually November of 2016, so she actually served more and longer than a year, I don't remember the NAACP of Minneapolis taking on any issues that talked in terms of employment, more jobs, and et cetera. In fact, we tried to, as a journalist and an agitator, we tried to encourage the NAACPs to take up the issue of the Viking Stadium. But because of the deals that were being cut, if you will, there was only one individual that was anointed, and that individual is profiting significantly and legally and rightly so, and that is the very powerful Louis King of Summit Academy, one of the training facilities, who was awarded a concession stand as well as he has a small concession truck that also operates outside of the stadium during game time. With his smoked wings and et cetera. Our sources indicate that since the stadium opened, first with a big international soccer game and then one exhibition game and then regular season games, that Mr. King has been averaging about $250,000 a session. That would make sense because he is a man that knows how to go after money, how to make money. And so that will be interesting. But back to in the last, 9 minutes of tonight's program, I have no recollection whatsoever of the NAACP of Minneapolis or the NAACP of St. Paul talking about jobs, making demands upon corporate Minnesota, if you will. Of course, maybe far too many of our leaders work for corporate Minnesota and consequently do not want to jeopardize their pensions, benefits, bonuses, and et cetera. But that is what has been said by the newly announced challenger for the office of mayor in the city of Minneapolis. But I want to specifically know, as one who is being told by even the current president of the NAACP of Minneapolis, Mr. Jason Soule, who indicates that he is an expert on the criminal justice system, and I can guarantee you that he is, based on his own history and circumstances. But I'd like to know how the reform of the Minneapolis Police Department will take place under the leadership of Levy-Bounds, if she is, in fact, gifted enough to become the next mayor of the city of Minneapolis. I mean, these are serious questions that must be put forward. Also, some of the questions that must be put forward is the issues of housing. The article in the Star Tribune indicated that Ms. Pound just moved back into the city of Minneapolis after residing for a number of years in the municipality of Brooklyn Park, which is a city, by the way, that is now half and half, half persons of color, half white. In fact, it would have seemed that she would have had a better chance to have made a difference in the municipality of Brooklyn Park as opposed to the city of Minneapolis, which is not, quote-unquote, 50%, quote-unquote, people of color. But again, that is an issue to be debated. It is an issue for the editorial writers of the papers and et cetera. But we know that, obviously, the organizational mechanism is in place. Clearly, we will, in the coming weeks and months, as we move into election 2017, that we will hear much about the plans for the rejuvenation, if you will, the revitalization of the African-American community. Now, I said that in somewhat of a very negative, if you will, and facetious way, and the reason is that I have been hearing so much. I've seen a number of articles and et cetera written which talk in terms of the prosperity that is being enjoyed by the African-American community here in the state of Minnesota. And, of course, when one looks around, one is puzzled on with all of the prosperity that the African-American community is enjoying, why there is so much violence in the African-American community. I mean, we average basically at least one shot every other day. And sometimes, in particularly Minneapolis, we make up for it with three or four shot in a single day. And so I continuously ask the question of my leadership, if you will, of those who are the articulators of the success of the African-American in Minnesota, is that with all the prosperity, why is it that we continue to have this level of violence? But also I would like for the supporters, if you will, and the new announced candidate for mayor, what they intend to do with the drug problem. That is not only the opiates and et cetera, which came to the attention, or at least they pretended that it came to their attention, when the beloved Prince lost his life to a opiate overdose, if you will. But I am watching a community, both places, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the suburbs, which are totally out of control. In fact, the number of ODs, in fact, I talked to the gentleman at a ceremony today here in Minneapolis for public safety, whose car was hit on Broadway, which is a main thoroughfare riding through Northwest for our domestic and international audience, by a gentleman who had just suffered his fourth OD, you know, overdose, in about a year, and ran into this gentleman's car. This gentleman is an instructor at the University of Minnesota, very respected gentleman, if you will, a member of the oversight group that put together a reform plan that the Minneapolis Police Department is now implementing and was beginning to implement even before the occupation of the 4th Precinct. But the person that ran into his car, totaling his car, almost costing him his life, almost costing the other individual, was on his fourth OD, if you will. And we clearly know that there is an epidemic, a frightening epidemic, going on, which has led to chaos, murders, aggravated assaults, beatings, and et cetera, attacks on people across the city. A video on WCCO TV, the CBS affiliate here in the Twin Cities, showing a man being plummeted, beaten by at least six or seven young men of color, unfortunately, in what is just an ongoing confrontation that is happening. That also then raises the question, as we come to a conclusion, that I'd like to certainly see the plan of the new announced candidate for the position of mayor to indicate what will be her approach. How will she guarantee a greater inclusion of officers of color into the Minneapolis Police Department? Because I know that what I saw during the occupation of D4 in November of 2015 is not how they think, as I watched them show absolute disdain and disrespect towards officers of color who were merely doing their job as it pertains to the oath that they had taken. And so we have a long agenda here in the beloved Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. As we said before, we're sorry that phone lines weren't open this evening. Maybe they'll be open next week. We're totally not sure. But we would also ask you to join us in watching our television program, which airs every Sunday here, because we have some additional observations and subtle messages for you about things that are happening that you as a community need to know about, particularly you parents who I'm not sure, unless unfortunately you are indulging in the art of drug activity and drug addiction, the threat that is being posed against the interests of your children. Let me also say this in closing, and maybe next week we will talk about it a little bit. It all depends, but I'm more interested in talking about it when the phone lines are open so that I can hear your voices and your observations. The Trump administration are already talking in terms of one of the ways to handle some of the problems in the inner city of law and order are to begin to create zones, if you will, quarantine zones, something we warned our community about a couple years ago when the Major League Baseball All-Star game was here. You would be surprised, in closing, my friends, the kind of discussion that has started no sooner than the final results were announced that Donald Trump had become the 45th president of the United States of America. This idea of setting up quarantine zones, if you will, and basically corralling people to maintain, quote-unquote, a presence in their own community and not go outside of that, you would be surprised at how quickly that has caught on. Particularly with at least one individual who now occupies a position of importance in the Trump administration. Again, we appreciate you spending the time with us for this past hour, and we will continue to take a look at Minneapolis, the election of 2017, and we will continue to take a look at a raging drug problem in the city of Minneapolis. We always say this on our television program, may the good Lord keep his hand upon the shoulder of the sons and daughters of the African. God knows with Donald Trump in the White House, we're going to need all the help that we can get. This has been Rommel Lee Edwards, and this has been the Ron and John program. Hopefully, we'll see you next week. God bless you. Good night.